back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Isn't it a lovely morning?
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. 8:04 is the time. Hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Friday, May 15th, 2026 edition. We're live and local, broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studios. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you. We'll be talking some Preakness in just a moment with our horse racing insider, Ed DeRosa. 63 degrees, going to be a beautiful day. It's going to get up to 88 today with some cloud cover. Some sun, certainly, but no chance of any precipitation. And then the weather looks to be absolutely outstanding for the weekend. Take advantage of it with high temperatures in the mid to upper 80s next week. Starts out well and then some rain by midweek. Hour number two of the program brought to you by the great folks at James Gattis Jewelers, your family's jeweler at 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick, and on the web at GattisJewelers.com. And every Monday and Friday, they bring you the Memphis Sports Fact. I kind of alluded to this in our first few minutes of the show today. You got the big barbecue contest, the World Championship Barbecue Contest going on down there at Tiger Lane in Liberty Park. Well, they also have a huge event as well. Did you know one of the nation's biggest Nike EYBL events is going on at the Sports and Events Center? Again, that's at Liberty Park. That's a stone's throw away from Tiger Lane, so there's going to be a lot of activity over there, but it's going on. It will feature some of the best players that play at the EYBL Nike level. That's 17-under teams, 16-under teams, 15-under teams, EYBL and EYCL. You're going to see some of the stars of the future. Remember when Cooper Flagg played in Memphis? That's going on this weekend. Again, James Gattis Jewelers, they always have something going on. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 4, closed on Sunday for all your jewelry needs. It's James Gattis Jewelers. For all our horse racing needs, we bring on our insider analyst and insider for Horse Racing Nation. He is our friend Ed DeRosa, who joins us. You can follow him on Twitter at EJXDT. Ed, how are you this morning? Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, yeah. I'm live here in Laurel, Maryland, and looking forward to 151st Preakness.
I spent many a day at Laurel, having been a University of Maryland student. We would go over there and we would bet on races and we would lose money. And a bunch of my fraternity brothers were actually waiters there at the race course in the clubhouse where they have the nice restaurant. Maybe they don't have it anymore. But yeah, so I'm very, very familiar with Laurel. Yeah, it's obviously being used because of the renovations and really the whole renewal of Pimlico. We talked a little bit about that the last time you were on. And, of course, we got Saratoga for a third straight year that will be the replacement for Belmont because the Belmont Stakes and that race course will not be back in use until next year. So a couple of backup courses for the Triple Crown races. But before we talk about what to expect at the Preakness, we got the unexpected Golden Tempo winning the Kentucky Derby and then deciding the owners not to bring the horse to Laurel. First of all, how shocked were you at that horse's come-from-behind win with the great odds? And then we'll get into your thoughts on a horse winning the Derby and not participating at the Preakness.
Yeah, I mean, Golden Tempo, I would say, surprised me. I mean, unfortunately, full disclosure, I didn't think much of his chances, so you know, wasn't a horse I backed and was definitely just wrong about that. I will say, though, that, you know, 23-1 odds in a what ended up being an 18-horse field, like, that's not astronomical. It's certainly not a Mind That Bird or Rich Strike level upset. This was a horse who had won a prep race on the road to the Derby, had one of the best jockeys in the game, Cherie DeVoe, certainly one of the best trainers. So, you know, there were signs there that I missed, admittedly. But nevertheless, this was never a horse that people thought was one of the ones for the Derby. So I'd call it a mild upset. And for those who cashed, if you were a believer, you got a great price. And he won't be around to burn you in the Preakness Stakes tomorrow, but that's just, this was a textbook example that if you handicap the race for a closer, he was one of the ones that you absolutely would have had to use. Unfortunately, I thought the winner would come from mid-pack, and that was part of the reason Golden Tempo wasn't really on my radar, but we'll miss him tomorrow for sure. I mean, he'd be even money or odds on in this race.
With the fact that it's another one choosing not to run in the Preakness, does that, do you believe, further the situation as far as maybe putting more time between the Derby and the Preakness?
Yeah, here's the balance for me, guys. Like, 2 weeks after the Derby, there's still some momentum. NBC covers both of the first jewels. And from a business standpoint, the betting dollars are there on Preakness. And, you know, the Derby winner certainly would add to the TV ratings, especially given the celebrity surrounding the first female trainer. It just adds to the excitement in the race itself. So I don't want to downplay that importance. But the reality is there's real brand recognition in a sport that severely lacks it any other time of year. So it would be a real risk to move the race, I think. So the question is, how do you get these horses to run back? Just candidly speaking, I think one of the issues that they don't run back as often anymore, there's been some changes to medication policy in regards to what you can treat horses with certain time out from races. And with the 2 week threshold of the Preakness, there's some certain, and by drugs, I'm not saying anything illicit. We're talking, you know, your typical, what, ibuprofen, acetaminophen, like, you know, painkillers after a hard day's work that you might take. Horses get the same regimen. You know, they get massage, they get all that stuff that athletes get. But now that's off the table if you want to run back in 2 weeks. So I think that's part of it. People don't like to talk about that for whatever reason, but that's just the reality of training athletes is, you mix chemistry and husbandry, and that's how you get horsemanship. So I don't mind it. I hope they figure it out, because I think that two-week period really does attract wagering dollars and interest much more than 3, 4, or 5 weeks ever would.
I buy what you're saying, and I defer to you for anything horse racing, even though I have been a fan and watched races since the late 60s. Again, you know a lot more than I know, but to me, what will also pique interest is when a horse has a chance to win a triple crown. And I think it's getting ridiculous. I think it's getting ridiculous. I know you said something about the timing and the schedule. I think what they should do is have 3 weeks, which would settle the issues you just brought up between all the both those races. They already have the 3 weeks, right, between the Preakness and the Belmont. I believe, right? So the other thing I would do is the entry fee. I would make it where the horses that enter have to enter for all three races, and you put a collective price. Now, if they are forced out by injury, and a doctor or a veterinarian, I guess in this case, says, yeah, they're hurt, they can't run, then they get a portion of that money back. But I think they have to commit to all three races, because there are so many people out there that are not horse racing fans but become horse racing fans when there's a chance for a Triple Crown winner. When there's not, I think it loses its luster. The fact that these races are at Laurel and Saratoga doesn't help, but you know what can you do about that? So I think it's really hurting the product. This is just an outsider looking in. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, there's no replacement for having a horse go for the Triple Crown, starting with the Derby winner and the Preakness, and then obviously if the Preakness winner or Derby winner wins the Preakness, and you have a sweep potential, that adds to it. The other thing is, you know, when you had these horses more than a handful running back from the Derby, including the winner, other horses who ran well, that also adds to the opportunity of a rivalry, which I would say is the second rung of a, you know, potential. Like, how do we get casual fans in? Easy Go or Sunday Silence. Unfortunately, now we're going on, was that 37 years ago? So it's getting a little long in the tooth. But, I mean, that's an example of, you know, people respond to that East Coast, West Coast. And you remove the chance of that with these horses not running back. And the other thing, and this doesn't get mentioned much, and I feel pretty strongly about it, is, you know, you call it a Triple Crown series, but for better or worse, Naira has pretty much gone on its own. The Belmont is on Fox, so you're not even on a singular TV entity.
Yeah.
And there is definitely, you know, someone who covers this year-round and talks to the players, both horsemen and executives. Like, there's a real separation now between the Belmont Stakes and the first two. And I'm sure TV's a part of that. There's probably other stuff involved. But, you know, as long as this isn't viewed as a single entity, it's going to suffer. And, you know, part of it is the Derby has gotten so big that it doesn't really need the other two. But racing benefits when all three are a singular unit. And your point about the entry fee, I think, is a good one. They do have a singular nomination process. So the first step of being eligible to these races is called a nomination. And that is a single $600 fee that covers all three races. And I would think there might be some opportunity, to your point, where a little closer to the races, you have maybe a second tier that, you know, you pony up for and makes it a little more lucrative to run in multiple races of the series.
While the top two horses from the Derby will not be running in the Preakness, the third horse, which was a big long shot coming in third there with Ocelli, will run in the Preakness. How big of a threat is he? Were people wrong on him? And how did he end up finishing third in the Derby?
Well, I'd say he ended up finishing third the same way Golden Tempo ended up winning, and Renegade, for that matter, in second. The race just fell apart. Horses went too fast early. And, you know, you look at the raw time, and it wasn't historically fast or anything like that, but they're pack animals, and, you know, it was a pretty thick pack up front on the lead, and they just all sort of backed out of it, and that sets the race up for horses like Ocelli. Golden Tempo was, you know, better than him on Derby Day, but they ran similar races. So the good news is if you liked Ocelli that day, you're going to get a similar pace set up in the Preakness. So he should be able to close again and give that similar run. The bad news is if you like Ocelli, you got 70-1 on Derby Day, and you're going to get about 8-1 tomorrow. So that's a pretty thick haircut, you know, price-wise, but he's going to get a similar setup again, so he's hard to completely discount. But he's never won a race. I'm willing to let him beat me.
You made a good point, Ed. You talked about the race, the Derby, and it wasn't any record-breaking time or anything of that stretch. And in the world we live in now, we see athletes in a bunch of different sports now breaking records, setting records, because they have a lot of things that maybe athletes from the past did not have. Training regimens, all kinds of things. In horse racing, I would think they also have advantages, but yet Secretariat still owns like every record. I know he was a super horse and we'll never see anything like him again, but why don't we see those records broken now like we're seeing in sports with human athletes?
I'd point to two things. One, equipment-wise, there really isn't a lot of difference. And the reason I mention equipment is harness racing, which is standard breds, mm-hmm. and they pull the cart behind them. They have gotten faster, and a big reason for that is the bikes are faster, like they're more aerodynamic, the way they're hooked up to the horse. The different equipment they use has just made huge strides. Well, racehorses, it's a saddle, a jockey, and silks. And, you know, there's been some development in silks and things like that to make them, you know, better for wind resistance and all that. But, you know, by and large, there just isn't a lot to improve science-wise in terms of what the horse actually carries. The other thing, and this goes back to medication and things like that, I mean, horses used to get steroids, and they don't anymore. And, you know, in professional athletics, even college athletics, you know, these guys, they're able to be treated at halftime. They're getting shots. I mean, who knows what things that you would be mortified to do to a racehorse on race day now. So, you know, professional athletes, they're able to train differently in part because of, I think, medication and chemistry type stuff. And again, nothing illicit. I'm not saying that not that people cheat. We know they do. But even just, you know, your over-the-counter, run-of-the-mill stuff to let you train for a marathon, in racing, we've gotten more strict about not using that kind of stuff on horses, especially closer to race day. So to me, it just makes it harder to train them as hard as they probably were trained back in the 60s and 70s.
Well, I'm putting my fingers in my ears if you say anything about Barry Bonds and Secretariat, okay? So do not even go in that direction. All right, Ed DeRosa joining us on the program.
So, Ed, Taj Mahal will go from the rail. A female trainer of that horse, one of the top horses in this race, so we could get history again, theoretically. But what do you think of the chances of Taj Mahal?
Yeah, females never won the Preakness either, so that would certainly be an incredible double. And I would say chances are they would face each other in the Belmont. So, you know, that would... I would think there'd be a lot of talk about a female triple crown, that type of thing. So there's some opportunity to get some buzz going in three weeks. And Taj Mahal has a legitimate chance. I would say, in my estimation, he's the most likely winner. Just be a matter of, you know, the price you're willing to take, which I believe I saw he's around 5-1 currently. Betting opened yesterday, so there's live money in the pool. And I think that's a fair price. This is an undefeated colt. I don't think the rail is an issue for him because he just wants to go to the front, and we'll see if he can lead him all the way around. But if he can, you're going to get the right price. And of the favorites, there's five or six in here that look like they're going to take an equal amount of money. He's the one I like best of the favorites.
All right. Who are the closers, and what is the setup at Laurel? Is it a place really where you can close and win?
Yeah, you can close and win there, especially with the mound 3/16. I mean, that's a far enough distance that if there's legitimate pace, as we saw in the Derby, which is a mile and a quarter, a 16th further, the field will come back to you. So if Taj Mahal doesn't have company up front, watch out, because he can win this race gate to wire. But if some of the other horses in there, you know, try to press him early, that could set up again for a closer. Ocelli, we mentioned, just think he's going to be over bet a little bit. I tell you what, guys, I'm going to take a shot with a long shot in here. Corona D'Oro is a horse who was excluded from the Derby. He didn't make it in on points. They pointed for this instead. And at 20-30-1, I just think that this isn't a field of world beaters. And I like his style, and he gets John Velasquez. Who let me down on Further Ado, so maybe I can get Johnny V, get my money back here in the Preakness. But Corona D'Oro, I think, is going to sit behind that speed and hopefully get first run on the closers. Sound like a broken record, because that was why I thought Further Ado was going to win,
right,
and it didn't work out. But, you know, this is a shorter field, shorter way around, so we're going to try it again with Johnny V at a big price.
All right, so what's your trifecta?
Trifecta, I'm swinging. It's a little more expensive than I give out. It's six horses, but what is that, $30 for 50 cents. But Taj Mahal and Iron Honor, so that's kind of the two more likely horses.
Mm-hmm.
Taj Mahal, Iron Honor, The Hell We Did, number 7. Number 14, Pretty Boy Mia. Number 4, Robusta. And shame on me, because he's my pick, but I actually don't know the number of Corona D'Oro. But
11,
if you box
11.
Those six, 11, thank you. So if you box those six up, 4, 7, 9, 11, 14, I get them all, that's $30. And you basically are guaranteed in that scenario to get one long shot in. By guaranteed, I mean, if that ticket hits, it's going to have to include one long shot, which is what bulks up the payout. So, and if things get really crazy and it's Corona D'Oro, Robusta, and Pretty Boy Mia, you're looking at thousands of dollars.
So you said 4, 7, 9, 11, 14. Did you have Taj Mahal in there too?
Oh, and Taj Mahal.
Yeah,
thank you.
So 1, 4, 7, 9, 11, 14.
What's the weather?
That's right.
What's the weather, Ed, for the race?
Amazing. No excuses. Looks like partly cloudy, so you'll get a little cover, probably a nice breeze. If it's supposed to be just like today, right now it's 67 and sunny. It's going to get up to mid-70s. Absolutely gorgeous.
Horse racing analyst, insider for Horse Racing Nation, our guy, Ed DeRosa, joining us from Laurel. Ed, as always, thank you. We'll talk to you before the Belmont.
That sounds good. I appreciate you having me on, guys.
Enjoy the race. Take care. Ed DeRosa.
I like the hell we insider. Did. I like the name of that horse.
Yes.
The hell we did.
The hell we did.
I'm thinking maybe that might be my horse just because of the name. Like I don't, not like I have any other reason to pick any other horse. Although maybe the Taj Mahal female trainer, maybe there's something
that
said.
Would be something, right?
Maybe we can get the history repeating itself in back to back. And as he said, then that could set up an interesting battle in the Belmont if those are your two winners with the two female trainers. I wonder if a female trainer's ever won the Belmont.
Yes. It had to be because Cherie became the second female trainer to win a Triple Crown race. So if they didn't do it in the Preakness and she was the first to do it in the Derby, that means the Belmont has won.
So that would be crazy if there hadn't been one the Belmont either, and you had the two set history, and then they're battling to try and become the first one ever as far as the Belmont is concerned as well. That would be crazy. Folks, when it comes to anything in the world of firearms, you know the place to go. That would be Classic Arms. Go see UTJ and the entire gang over at Classic Arms. Whatever type of firearm you might be looking for, or whatever firearm supplies you might be looking for, from ammunition to safes and cases, all that stuff, anything in the world of firearms, they've got it for you. They got not only new guns, but they also have used guns, because not only do they sell, but they will also buy and they will also trade guns over at Classic Arms. They've got all the top brand names that you can imagine as well. They do free gun inspections, free gun appraisals, free bore sighting, guaranteed lowest price in town. You find it all at Classic Arms. Shop online 24/7 at classicarmsofmemphis.com, or better yet, go see them in person. 1740 Germantown Parkway. That's right behind Corky's Barbecue there in Cordova. Again, for anything in the world of firearms, go see them at Classic Arms.
NBA mock drafts coming in fast and furious, and mock trades involving Ja Morant. We'll talk about that when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:30 the time. Final hour and a half here for us this week here on Sports 56 Mornings. Normally at this time, Joe DeLeon would join us. He is off this week. He'll return next Friday. We got lots to get to, but if you want to hit us up, anything that's on your mind in the world of sports, Sissy's Log Cabin Listener Lines available to you. You can call in or text in at 901-360-8255.
Scotty Scheffler bogeyed his first hole of the day today to fall back to 2 under par. Martin Keimer, the great throw from yesterday, 3 over through 5 to start his round today.
The difference a day makes, right?
Patrick Reed has moved into a tie for the lead. He is at 3 under par, along with Minwoo Lee, Alex Smalley, Potgieter, Jaeger, and Hisasuni.
They're all Potgieter
currently tied for the lead. Smalley, the only other one, along with Reed, that is out on the course right now. But again, Scotty Scheffler, one back. He bogeyed his first hole, left a birdie putt just right on the edge of the cup on his second hole of the day as he plays the back nine first. Another chilly morning there at Aronimink, and supposed to warm up as the day goes along. We are off and running in round number 2 of the PGA Championship. Garrick Higo, the whole Garrick Higo thing yesterday, his interviews and stuff after the round,
his answer to the question was confusing.
He's so, I still don't know.
I was there on time, he said.
I was late, but on time.
Yeah, that's what he said.
I was late, but on time. And it's like, You know, he's playing with Sean McKeel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Sean McKeel is in his group that he's playing with in these first two rounds. Because even the one he said, you know, they hadn't even announced Sean yet, and I was there. And but he like and it, in the interview with Marty Smith on ESPN, and he kept he was like, I mean, it's the rule. Like, if you're late, you know, I know that's the rule. And then he's like, and I was late, but I was on time. And at the end, Marty Smith's like, so do you agree with the penalty? And he's like, no. You just said it's the rule, and you weren't there. You were late. I don't know how you can disagree with the penalty if you know it's the rule and you know you were late.
Here's what I think he was trying to say. I forget what his tee time was. Let's just make up a tee time, okay? Let's say 7:40 a.m. I think what he's saying is, I was there at 7:40, but the clock was 7:40, 22 seconds. When you really got to be there at 7:39 when your tee time is 7:40. I think he's saying, I was there at 7:40, but...
Except for he wasn't. He was a minute late.
Right. But I think that's what he's...
I believe his tee time was actually 7:18 and he showed up at 7... Or 8... It might have been Eastern. It might have been 8:18 and he showed up at 8:19.
Yeah, the point is that he... I think he's arguing that he was there at the exact time of their scheduled tee time and that it was just seconds later when you're saying... Which was the case, he was at least a minute late. And by the way, how do they... I always thought they flipped like we do, like flip a tee. How do they determine who's going first to open the tournament? Like, was he the third guy off?
No, that's what his thing is. He knew he was going third.
Right.
And so his thing, what I believe he's saying when I was late but on time is, I was not like... I had not been
announced.
It was not my turn.
It wasn't yet.
I was there in plenty of time for my turn.
That's true. He's saying, why do I have to be there when Sean McKeel's hitting when I'm there for me?
Yeah, so that I think that's what his point was, is that I was there in plenty of time.
But that's not the rule.
It's not like they were ready to announce me and I wasn't there.
Right.
I was there. Whenever they were going to announce me, I was going to be there ready to hit. But he admitted knowing the rule. Like he said, like, the rule is you have to be there. And yet he says he disagreed with the penalty, which I'm like, I don't know how you can disagree with something when you knew the rule and you know you were late based on the rule.
But the bottom line
is... He kept talking in circles.
I know.
It was just hilarious to hear him talk about it.
But don't make it a close shave. And he still ended up shooting, what, one under?
He would have been tied for the lead without the penalty.
Right.
It's an unbelievable round of golf to have that before you even start. And to go out there and play the way he did is crazy. I mean, he would have been tied for the lead had he not, if he'd just shown up for his tee time on time, he would have been tied for the lead last night.
Just get there ahead of time. Don't wait. He said, I like to wait to the last second. Don't wait until the last second. But again,
he said he did not have his watch. He did not have his phone. His caddy had already gone over because his caddy went to put his track man away. Again, if I'm in that situation and I don't have my watch or my phone, I'm probably ask if I know it's getting close, probably ask somebody around me, hey, what time is it? So I can know, make sure that I am on the tee box well before my scheduled tee time.
I'm sure there's also a big clock around there. But again, to open the tournament, when do they and how do they determine who goes first in order?
I think it's just determined by the order. I don't know whatever you're listed on the thing. I don't know.
Okay, there's no draw or anything. Obviously,
no.
It's different when you have scores and you've already competed. But when you go in there and everybody is all even, I always wondered about how they do that.
Keith Texan says you have to give it up for Patrick Reed. He really steps up in the big moment. I mean, listen, the dude. Well, he's playing great golf this year on the DP World Tour, and that's what's going to earn him a spot back on the PGA Tour. I mean, he's been playing fantastic golf. But yes, Patrick Reed, no question. In the majors, he does generally step up and play some good golf.
I think he's a great golfer. He's from Augusta. That's why he plays so well at the Masters, having won there. But I'm sorry, there's always going to be that attachment of he cheats, or he's cheated before with Patrick Reed. I don't know all the circumstances and all that, but people always
claim cheating with
Patrick Reed. That name is associated with cheating. All right. Okay. We're in the mock draft season. We've been in the mock draft season even before the draft lottery, but now we're really in the mock draft season because we know the exact order, unless trades are made. And it's interesting because a lot of people out there who put these mocks together are going out there on a limb and they're predicting trades, even possibly between one and two. So nothing is etched in stone. I am looking at our friend Sean Devaney's mock at heavy.com, where he has the Grizzlies selecting Cameron Boozer at number three. But what's interesting about his mock is he has Jaxel Lendeborg, who interviewed with the Grizzlies. I'm not sure if he's worked out yet for him. He has him going sixth to Brooklyn. That's the first time I have seen, and I haven't looked at every single person's mock, but that's the first time I've seen somebody other than the big four, the four-point guards, everybody knows who I'm talking about, not be the top eight in one order or another. He's got Lendeborg. I think the guy you got to look out for is Mara. I think that's the guy who can move up. But let's get back to people coming up with trades. And now a lot of people, since we know the order, are coming up with trades for the Grizzlies because it's not a secret what the Grizzlies want to do with Ja Morant. Whether or not a trade happens, whether or not a trade happens at draft time or right before the draft or after the draft, we don't know. But these people are putting together trades that would involve the Grizzlies and Ja Morant draft night. And it would also involve the Grizzlies moving around in the draft. I saw one where the Grizzlies would drop to four. I wrote that one down. This one was Ja Morant and the number three pick to the Chicago Bulls for Patrick Williams, Isaac Okoro, Rob Dillingham, and the number four. Okay. Unless you're absolutely enamored with the third guy that you have on the list, assuming not taken at one or two, over the guy who was your fourth guy, and you don't believe you can get more for Ja Morant, that's not bad right there. Now, I've seen others where they got Ja, and they got the Grizzlies dropping the six involving a trade with Ja Morant. I don't know if you're going to drop that far, especially if you are, again, enamored with those top four guys, in the order, whatever order you have. But there may be somebody else who they like. And that's the only way I could see that the Grizzlies, if Ja were to be traded draft night, that they would move down. I just don't think they would move down to that spot. But this one I just brought up, Eli, it's fairly intriguing, is it not?
I think there's less than a 0% chance of it happening.
Less than a 0% chance.
They're not going to take that many players back. They don't have roster spots.
Yeah, but some of the players they have, they may be better. And then here's the thing. What do they think they can get for Ja? I know what they've held out for. They wanted a first. And the offers that they got, which we don't know exactly what they got offered, was not good enough. Most people believe in the basketball know that the offers that they'll get now will be more substantial than what they would have got if they forced a trade before the trade deadline of the past season. But how substantial? I don't know. I mean, I still think that there's going to be a Ja resurrection. How long that lasts, I have no idea, but it's going to be Ja's return to being Ja. Not the high-flying act, not the Walenda, but I think Ja could be really, really good. People have debated online. He's not a pure point guard. He's a combo. Well, he's not a great shooter. I think he's more a point guard than he is a two. But there's a lot of debate on him. But his name has popped up, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of those trades that involved the Grizzlies and Ja Morant.
Yeah, I mean, there's people are going to create a lot of stuff out there with Ja Morant trades because they know the Grizzlies are going to trade him, want to trade him. And so, yes, and using Ja's name will get people's attention. So there will be a lot of stuff thrown out there. I don't see any way in the world they trade out of the number three spot.
Really?
I don't. Now, could they use the 16 pick? Could something be involved with the 16th pick to make a Jaw trade happen? Sure, could. But I don't see any chance of the Grizzlies trading in any way the number three pick.
How about if Boozer's not there for them at three? Because the connection with Kleiman, the thought is that Boozer's the best player by a lot of people. In a lot of people's minds, he's the best player. And that's the one that most people have penciled in at number three. If Cam Boozer wasn't available...
I don't think Cam Boozer is the number one player in a lot of people's minds.
I think it's...
There's a reason he's looked at as the number three pick.
I don't know. I'm saying don't be surprised if he's not available at three. That's all I'm saying. He may very well be. But we don't know what order they have. We don't know if there's another dude out there. I don't think there would be. But what I'm saying is, and again, this is just somebody coming up concocting this deal, and I'm looking at that going, well, Rob Dillingham was a top what pick by Minnesota?
I don't remember.
Was he a lottery? He was a lottery, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly
okay.
he was.
Better than Walter Clayton right now.
But if you're the Grizzlies,
can you eat some capital?
You're going to be cutting like three guys.
Okay, can't you do that? Because wasn't it where we heard like a couple of years ago, maybe last year, that Parra will spend? Remember we heard that? Parra will spend? Well, right now it seems like there's a lot of cost cutting going on. But I look at Patrick Williams compared to the kid they got from Utah, the former UCF guy. What's his name?
Taylor Hendricks.
Hendricks? I'm not so sure about him. I'm just saying that right there is
not... You're sure about Patrick Williams?
No, I'm not 100% sure. Patrick Williams...
All those guys are really upgrades over
Patrick Williams.
Got.
Patrick Williams has been around a little bit longer in the NBA and has been a little bit more steady. Not great, but consistent. And I'm just saying that if you had the three and the four and you looked at, like, say you had Peterson and Wilson and you were like, we like them the same. One's a big, one's a shooting guard. We like them the same. And somebody offers you a nice package for Ja and it moves you down four. I'm saying it's not out of the question. You're saying it's less than 0%. In other words, no way in hell. Hell's going to have to freeze over twice. The Eagles are going to have to come back out and tour again, which they've done 30 times since hell freezed over. I don't know. To me, I think it's more likely that a big deal is made for the draft that involves Ja. Whether or not it involves the number three, I don't know. I think there's more likelihood that the draft... Because, again, at that time, people right now... teams are right now trying to figure out where they stand, what's possible with the draft, what's possible with free agency. It could come after free agency. I don't know, but I just have a feeling it's going to come before the draft. What do you think, Jay Ham, about all this?
It's way too early, I guess, for me to really gauge it because we really just don't know what these people are thinking. I agree with Eli, though. The idea of trading the third spot, for what? No reason for it. Take that third spot. If you're going to look at anything, 16 will be, the way that we would go to try to upgrade things. But whether Boozer's there at three or not, you still got the third
pick. But we're only talking about three and four, exchanging three and four. If people are saying that pretty much the top four are the same and you're going to get a big package to move down, it's just like if I'm Washington. Unless you are absolutely DeBonta is the guy, we're picking him, it doesn't matter what we're being offered, then if you're thinking, well, you know what, Peterson, we love Peterson, we love Boozer, and especially if right now they're going, we're going to pick one of those two before DeBonta, then you would make a trade with Utah and let Utah move up to one. You don't tell them what you're doing, you just let them move up, because they're picking DeBonta. Utah is picking to. I don't care what kind of things are out there with media members in Salt Lake City. You got the owner and his connection with DeBonta from his time at BYU. The whole connection doesn't make sense to go in another direction. There'll be a lot of smoke screens out there. But if I'm Washington and DeBonta's not my number one, I look to make a trade with Utah to go to two, get some assets. They take the Bonsa. You still get your guy.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you get something that makes you better, but that stupid Chicago trade doesn't make the Grizzlies better.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I understand. I'm just saying that's one of... I mean, there was one with Brooklyn. I've seen one with Phoenix, Sacramento, Minnesota, Milwaukee. And there's more teams now that we're hearing about. Again, it's all Rumorville. But there's more teams because during the trade deadline, it was like, maybe they'll make a deal with Miami. Yeah. Maybe they'll make a deal with Sacramento. Milwaukee wasn't even brought up because the Giannis thing was still up in the air.
Milwaukee was brought up.
Well, wasn't it kind of, didn't it simmer down after Giannis said, no, I'm committed to staying? I mean, he has said it like every 3 months.
The thought, what? Like the whole thought with the Milwaukee trade is that if they do keep Giannis, if they don't keep Giannis, Ja makes no sense. If they keep Giannis, putting Ja with him is what the Milwaukee possibility
is. But there was uncertainty whether or not he was going to demand a trade or not. It was just uncertainty altogether.
The whole thing came out that one of the reasons it wouldn't happen is they wouldn't include Ryan Rollins in the trade.
Okay. All right. But anyway, there's more teams now. Don't you think?
Yeah, there's all it. Off season is easier to trade because it's off the salaries and everything else. Teams know where they are and all that stuff. In season, it's hard because teams are stuck with what they've got.
That's why I think there will be something done by the trade deadline. Folks, it's barbecue time. The World Championship Barbecue Competition going on at Tiger Lane. Now, whether you're in your backyard or on Tiger Lane, you're part of a team, stop by Dinstall's to add that special touch to your weekend. You have your barbecue and you have your dessert. Dinstall's fine candies and chocolates. How about the cashew crunch? How about the chocolate-covered strawberries, the turtlelettes, the chocolate-covered pretzels? Treats for the graduates as well. Many youngsters graduating from their high schools, from their colleges. A lot have already done so. But how about celebrating with a sweet treat for them? You can have them ship anywhere in the country. So you got a friend or family member celebrating a birthday, whatever the case may be. Send them some chocolate, some candies from Dinstall's. They've been doing it up for 126 years. It is hard to fathom that they have been doing it for that long and doing it so well. Five locations: Collierville, Germantown, downtown Memphis, Pleasant View, where they make the candies, and Laurelwood in East Memphis. Stop by today and get yourself some Dinstall's. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Very superstitious.
Right, a couple of texts here on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line. Reggie, Texan, says, why would you tank to get in the lottery and then trade down? Don't make sense.
Well, if you got a great package, you would trade down. If you're not, again, sold on that's the dude you want, and the other guys around him you like just as much, and then you bring in more assets. I mean, it's not crazy talk. You're not leaving the lottery. We're talking about one spot here.
Another Texas. A trade with Atlanta, giving up Ja, the 16th pick and a future first for the 8th pick, Kuminga and Corey Kispert. Atlanta would laugh hysterically, I think, at that offer. Like, what? They're going to give up Jonathan Kuminga and Kispert to get Ja and trade down 8 spots in the draft?
Yeah, I think overvaluing Ja.
If Atlanta were to do that deal, you'd do that in a heartbeat. From the Grizzlies' perspective, you'd do that in a heartbeat. I don't think Atlanta's trading down 8 spots and giving up Kuminga and Kispert to get Ja.
I don't know if you're even getting a first rounder in a trade for Ja. If you're getting back a first rounder.
They may have to give up a first rounder for somebody to take him.
That's sad. I mean, that is sad.
I mean, again,
that is sad right there.
And the thing is, there's a good chance that the teams that you're looking to trade, if Milwaukee decides they're moving Giannis, he's the number one trade target.
Sure.
Of all these teams. So if say the Clippers decide they're going to move on from Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's other guys that teams are targeting before the Ja becomes the consolation of, okay, we lost out on all these other guys. Maybe we could do something with Ja, but they're still not going to give up a ton of assets to get him.
That's why if you got a fish on the line right now, you reel it in and don't wait for teams to make decisions on some of the bigger names. See what you got out there. If it's a decent offer, take it. Don't be choosy.
Scottie Scheffler with another bogey. He has made 2 bogeys already through his first 3 holes of the day. He has dropped down to 1 under par. Patrick Reed also made a bogey. He is out of the tie for first. So now it is a 5-way tie. The only one on the course amongst the guys at 3 under par is Alex Smalley. All the others, Botgieter, Jaeger, Lee, and Hisasuni will all go later today. Rough start so far for Scottie Scheffler to round 2, playing the back 9 first, which is the tougher 9 out there. And wind is blowing. It's a little bit cold once again, so some tough conditions, and Scheffler has bogeyed 2 of his first 3 holes.
What did you think of Scheffler nailing the silhouette challenge? Come on.
Any of those guys, again, it's
come on.
It's crazy. It's insane to me.
Michael Block, LeBron James, they from the silhouettes. I think it's nuts. College baseball last night, Ole Miss loses at Alabama 5-4. Both teams back in action tonight in Tuscaloosa. Pre-game starting at 5:30 right here on Sports 56, 98.5 FM. And the University of Memphis, congratulations to Matt Reiser and company. They beat Charlotte last night 9-4 in game 1 of their 3-game set that clinches a spot in the American Conference Tournament in Clearwater. First time in 3 years for Memphis. But Memphis, with 2 more games, could still move up the ladder as far as seeding is concerned. And it's a big, big advantage in the American Conference with baseball seeding, just like it was with basketball seeding, where the top 2 teams are automatically into the semis. In baseball, you get a couple of byes and you are into the quarters automatically. So you really can win the conference tournament with having only won 3 games, meaning your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday starters. So you're not going deep into the bullpen. It is a great advantage to be 1 or 2, even 3 or 4, you get a bye as well. And again, Memphis has put themselves into that position because they have played some great baseball in conference over the last 3 weeks. Hour 3 on the way. We open with 10 in a row, the game show that has swept the nation, give you a chance to win a great prize package. And that'll be followed by the former ESPN personality, Kenny Mayne. He'll join us at 9:30. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue is a great option for lunch today, for dinner this weekend. Bring the family or bring it home to the family. They've been serving up delicious slow-smoke barbecue for 40 years. They've been catering that entire time. If you got an event coming up, you want it catered, let Corky's cater it for you, starting as low as $7.99 per person. They got lunch specials every day, party packs that start at just $7.99. When you get yourself your entree, your barbecue sandwich, maybe even their award-winning catfish plate, add a third of a rack of ribs for just $7.99. If you want them to deliver, that's what they do. $3.99 set price, local delivery fee to your home or office in the Memphis area. 4 locations, Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Poplar Avenue in Collierville, Germantown Parkway in Cordova, Goodman Road in Olive Branch. It's Corky's. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. Hour three on the way. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.